Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
That's true.
Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
Gentlemen, let's start off with a question from a listener. And just so everybody knows, we love to get your questions, and this is what we exist for. We try to give our advice from our own narrow, limited points of view, and we know that we could be tremendously wrong. So if everything falls apart and fails, whoops. So beginning right now with a question from Ken. Ken's been a regular listener. Love Ken. Ken wants to know, what do you guys think about advertising? I may be wrong, but it seems as though you've built the Diamond Club without a penny spent in advertising. If you were to wake up in a world where the Diamond Club didn't exist, which actually, if you're paying attention to Journey Quest, could happen, and no one had ever heard of your names, would you buy ads? If so, where and how? Same question applies to you, Andrew. After you built a career as a magician, it seemed like you just decided to become an author one day. How did you convince people to read your early books? For context, I have a humble podcast, which I brought up before, Today's Tea with Kenny P, and I'll buy the odd ad on podcasts I enjoy because I want to support them, and I figure there's more value in it for me than supporting their patron, but I don't notice any spikes after I buy an ad, just the slow, gradual path I seem to get anyway. Maybe my ads suck. I'm trying to think about how and why I start to listen to new podcasts, and it's always either a podcast from someone I enjoyed in some of the work, or an unpaid recommendation from someone with similar taste. Gentlemen?
Man, lots to go through. I would say that if there's a unifying thread between your author career and the development of Diamond Club is that we built it first and tried to seduce an audience, I guess, or attract an audience to it. Like we did it without the expectation of making any money for a very, very long time before mm-hmm. we opened up a ability for people to contribute. Advertising is a very, or tends to be a very, very ineffective way, or not ineffective, I'm sorry, inefficient way to get your mm-hmm. message out, right? Like,
agreed.
If I want to reach people, the best way is for me to create a show that consistently creates a certain kind of content that attracts a certain set of viewers, and then everybody very excitedly tunes in to listen to what I have to say, and I'm talking to exactly the right people with exactly the right relevant message at exactly the right time. Advertising isn't that. And this is coming from somebody who's finally dipping a toe into advertising, because there are a lot of people who know who I am, what scam stuff is, but for whatever reason, don't happen to every Friday tune in to listen to our latest release on scamstuff.com. So we're trying to reach these people. And so we're buying Facebook ads, and it's worth it, but it's only barely worth it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if we spend $50, we can expect to make, you know, $75 profit. But that is still a case of me reaching people who otherwise wouldn't hear it, but who already know who I am and are already primed to be in the right place to do it. So I don't know. I would say advertising for us, or for me in general, has been the avenue of, I don't want to say last resort, but it's been the last least effective way to get the word out to those who, for whatever reason, you know, aren't keeping up on stuff from our regular podcasts.
Yeah. You know, I think there's two elements to this. Number one, there's, you know, the idea, and I'll let Andrew discuss how, you know, the one day where you just decided to become an author. In general with content stuff, you got to be very careful. Advertising is a very precarious rope bridge, and the longer that you try to stretch it, the less effective that it will be. If there is a place in which, like, let's say Weird Things or Night Attack or something like that would advertise, it would probably be like on Scam School. Like, it would be, you know, getting ads specifically on that channel if we could or we wanted to spend the money, because then at least we know that there is something that is watched on a regular basis that is primarily internet-based and that a lot of people have an affinity for Brian. And so you can string that little rope bridge from scam school to one of these podcasts if we wanted to do that. That would at least make some kind of sense. Otherwise, man, I don't know. Like, because I don't know if I'm listening to a wrestling podcast that I like, if somebody just advertises another wrestling podcast that I need another one, you know? If really the best form of advertising that I've heard is just when there's a celebrity or somebody that I already have a relationship with that has a podcast that I just don't know about, right? Like, I don't know if subject matter advertising on anything for a podcast works.
Well, and I would say even beyond advertising, you know, it's an organic cross-promotion opportunity when two people on the same podcast network you know, have an ad at the beginning where it's like, hey, it's me, the guy you love from that wrestling event, and you're listening to that other wrestling event, so I bet you know me. Well, I'm also on the network. My show's like this guy's show, only we focus more on tacos. Come listen. Like, I don't even know how effective that is. I mean, I assume it's worth doing, but...
I'm going to jump in and say it starts with product. It starts with what you're doing. If what you're doing is so niche, you're not going to see explosive growth. Like, okay, Ken, like, I'm not listening to your show, like, I like you, but a tea podcast, I have no interest in. Now that's, but there are people who probably do. What is the percentage of the population that one that has an interest in a podcast about tea in this? And I read the description, like, I don't quite know what it is. I know it involves tea. You've talked about it before. I don't know who your audience is. So, like, you have to, when we started years ago, it was 10 years ago, Justin and I started itricks.com, a magic news blog. We knew exactly who our audience was. We knew what they were reading. We knew what they were doing online. And we said, here's a way we can serve these people because we can do daily magic news, which they're not getting. There was nobody in that space. There was nobody stupid enough to try to get into that space because it was going to be resource intensive. But we said, we will go in there and we could bring in my audience. I already had a mailing list of, you know, email list from people who bought my magic products. So I could say, hey, everybody, go to this news site. And then we could go to a few other magic sites. And, you know, we were building over 1,000 daily visitors and we could build podcasts in there because there was a clear niche for there. Brian and doing scam schools, like, there are people who want to learn how to do cool stuff and do magic tricks. There's a clear audience for that. There's a clear path for that. And Brian could go online and he could say, okay, I can do an output that's higher than other people. I can do quality that's better than what everybody else is doing. And I'm not just another person in a sea of thousands raising your arm going, look at me, look at me. So you need to make sure that your podcast or your product is not just a super, super tiny niche, because guess what? It's never really going to grow explosively. There's just not enough people out there that have an interest in that. So that's problem. That's step number one. Does on paper, does it fit? Two, is the quality and everything there? Because you might have a problem of like, I might get a lot of people who dip into, but if they just go, man, not for me, and leave, then they're going to stay. If I can get a lot of attention to my books, but if people pick up the book and get in the first page and it's not for them, and that's a thing I run into. Like, I have a Twitter audience that largely is from people who like me from my TV show. They're not necessarily book readers, and they may love me, but if I'm like, hey, read this book, they're like, hey, what's over here? They're like,
go back to punishing people using the powers of magic.
Yeah, and that's like, I've had to, you know, I knew that going into it because I talked to like people like, oh, you know, like in publishing, like, we love you, got a big Twitter fall. I'm like, yeah, if I say I'm going to be on TV tomorrow night, these people are excited about it. If I say I've got a new book, it's a different context. So, yeah, I don't think – I think that and I don't think it's always helpful to say just make the product great. I knew when I started writing, the first thing I wrote was a novella called The Grendel Shadow. It was a science fiction story. I chose that because I knew at that time the Weird Things audience liked science fiction, right? We're always doing science fiction picks. So if I'm like, hey, guys, I got a 99-cent short story, a science fiction story, it was the perfect sort of segue for that audience. I did not go, hey, guys, I got a really cool mystery thriller that has nothing to do with science fiction or monsters or stuff.
And we put the first chapter at the end of the podcast.
Like we said, we put the first. Yeah. It fit. If we did something like we could do that. We might do that again with, you know, Blackfall or something like that, because people now understand how that brand fits in. But at the beginning, like it had to be on topic for what we're doing. And then so people got into it, got great reviews, did Public Enemy Zero, which was okay, science fiction, but more thriller, not far out there. So the same audience could come on board from there. And then from Public Enemy Zero to Angel Killer, which was my biggest seller yet, it was a big jump. And I'm telling you, like, not everybody came with me from Public Enemy Zero and Weird Things to Angel Killer. That had to kind of find its own momentum, you know, and it helped. But Angel Killer, actually, I could see the blip from everybody within the Weird Things audience and the Diamond Club audience with Angel Killer. And then I watched that thing sort of just flatline and then 3 months later pick up as it went into another audience.
Let's do this. Let's look at his question as he wrote it, which is, you know, he has a podcast, Today's Tea with Kenny P. I'm going to assume that that the question's really not about how good are advertising. I would say, well, first of all, I'll tell you this. If you want to make a successful podcast, I do not recommend that you buy advertising. Advertising will not force a community to happen. What you want to do is create a community underneath you. And part of what that means is showing up regular on time with quality content every single week, or at least as close to quality content as you're able to manufacture. See Night Attack. But if you want to reach other people, then let's assume there exists a community of people who are tea enthusiasts, in which case what you do is you find out what are all the most popular tea podcasts, and you start. You don't go to them asking if you could show up for free or offering them money in exchange for a slice of their time. Instead, what you do is you go to them and say, what can I offer you? Or don't even do that. You can, if you hear them talking about a thing, record a tight 30-second package of you saying, hey guys, it's so-and-so. I heard you talking about blah, 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 and it led me to the question of this. When it comes between oolong and whatever, tea, you know, which one wins in a fight? Thanks, and whatever. By creating content, you create value for them. That's something that they can easily slot into their stuff. And then after doing that a few times, you're like, hey, can I join you guys for a podcast? I have some really strong opinions about this new, Earl Grey Black. And then you show up and you are entertaining and you bring something to the table. Then all of a sudden, that little plug at the end, because that's the difference, is you don't show up knocking on their door and asking listeners to come to your other nightclub. It's like, man, I just got to this nightclub. This is the nightclub I like to hang out with. So instead, you show up and you're one of the best dancers on the floor and you're like, hi, now if you want to get more of this, I'm over here, and people come along. Assuming the show is about more than just tea, then that's fine. Figure out who your audience is and figure out how to reach them in an organic way where you provide value first, because understand, advertising does not provide value. Nobody listens to an ad and says, well, I'm better for having known that, or very, very rarely does that happen. Advertising can be a classy way to ask a favor to cash out some of the goodwill that you built up.
I mean, there are cases where, you know, you can have markets that are under advertised too. Like we knew, like with iTricks, we knew that magicians actually liked magic. They liked to know what's new in magic, and they wanted to know what was coming out there. They weren't getting enough news about new tricks and new stuff like this. And so that was kind of a rare instance of like movie news, things like that, or things where ad and content sort of blends together. But that's rare, as Brian points out. And I would say that you have to think about what's your discoverability footprint. If your product exists solely in iTunes as a podcast and you're waiting for somebody to type T to discover you, ain't never going to happen. You know, we would look at, like with iTricks, we would look at Google searches and things like that for topics to see how often, or you do Google AdWords and you see how often a keyword's likely to come up. You'd be surprised at, maybe 7 billion people on the planet, but chances are 7 billion of them don't care the entire week about the thing you're trying to push. So you need to increase your footprint. Do you do a blog? Do you blog post on it? Do you do weekly blog posts talking about this stuff? Because that's discoverability. Somebody who's really into tea may not even be thinking about a goddamn podcast on tea, may have no idea that it exists. But if you blog about tea, then you increase the number of people that come to you, you know, because you're YouTube is great for discoverability. iTunes is not. iTunes is a silo. It's really hard unless you're in a broad category like science and they go, oh, here's a top science podcaster. Unless you're in the top category there, ain't nobody ever going to find you. So you need to figure out, how do you create more content? So I would say blog about it. If you could do a, hey, you know, Kenny's Tea of the Week pick on YouTube, you know, and I know that's to ask you to do a video thing. If you want to bring people into what you do, this is what you got to do, is you've got to send up flags all over the place and arrows pointing to what you're doing. And that's not ads. That's creating content that leads people to where you're trying to put, direct their attention.
I even think that that might be like in my mind, there is like an evolutionary chart of ways that you communicate on the internet. And some of them are very chaotic and some of them are very inert, but they are very sticky. Right. So podcasting to me is next to live streaming, maybe the most inert, but sticky. You can fall in love with these personalities and you will ride with them forever. However, it's in the burbs, man. It takes you a little bit to get there. The downtown are the chaotic platforms. And I would say for something like tea, like YouTube videos and blogs, which I think at one time were the most chaotic, are now maybe even they're in the middle between it. Like Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, like highly discoverable places where you can immediately make an impression, and that's it. Now that's hard to build a living off those. Some people, only the most successful, build a living on the most chaotic, right? And that can fleet at any second. But if you want to generate attention, you want to introduce yourself to a lot of people who are very interested in finding out what you do, then to me, you lead them down that breadcrumb path, right? And you go from very chaotic, chaotic things to very inert and sticky things. And so you have them go from, oh my God, I laughed at this guy's Twitter joke, or I love that this guy takes amazing pictures of the tea that he's drinking and it looks great and they have themes and it's funny and it's punny or something, to, oh, well, he links this long, funny thing, a blog in his bio of his Instagram, to, oh my God, I love this guy's blog. He's got a podcast and it's even funnier. But it's like, you got to walk everybody down, or else you're just putting a sign up in downtown saying, hey, there's a great party that happens 40 minutes away in the suburbs. If you're not there, man, that's up to you. It's great. Trust me.
So Bryce points out that also Kenny's podcast comes out only once every 3 to 6 weeks. Can't say it enough. If you want to make it in the podcast game, regularity is key. Every single week.
5% of winning is showing up.
Yeah.
75.
Correct.
And if not higher.
Well, and especially, like, understand the reasons you tell your stories are not necessarily the reasons people listen to your story. You could tell your story because you're passionate about tea, and people can appreciate that you're passionate about tea, but ultimately they want you to show up because it's Tuesday morning and I'm on that stair stepper for 45 minutes and I need somebody to hang out with me and keep me thinking about anything other than the fact that I'm stepping on stairs, or I have that long commute or whatever. I expect you to give me an aha moment. I expect you to make a clever metaphor or tell an anecdote that I can pinch and make my day interesting later in the day. Think in terms of those practical things that people need and why they go to podcasts, whether it's to pass the time, whether it's to learn something, whether it's to be entertained and laugh out loud. Now, having said that, there are exceptions to the rule. You can be a Dan Carlin and do hardcore history that only comes out, two to three times a year. But each of those are an exquisitely crafted audiobook that are unique in and of themselves. That's a very difficult game to play. And it's wonderful that Dan Carlin's able to do that. If you're not Dan Carlin, and, you know, pro tip, I'm not Dan Carlin. I don't think any of us here on the panel are Dan Carlin. Absent that, you got to show up every single week, every single week.
I would say that sometimes, too, that you can be passionate about something and we think that it needs to be in this form. And sometimes it can be in a much more simple form. History and pictures, the history and pics, the Twitter feed. Which was kind of hilarious because it's done by, it turned out it was done by like high school kids who didn't quite know their history, which made it even more amusing. But, it was this neat fact digestible thing. And like Justin pointed out, like if you created a bite size, like if you did a photo of a tea thing, a neat tea photo with a tea fact, an interesting thing about tea facts, I know so many people that would subscribe to that thing on Instagram because they love tea and they got this really cool little tea fact thing with a cool photo. paste that fact onto the photo, because you have to understand that people will not, if they want to recirculate it, they're not going to cut and paste your full message. They're just going to take the simplest reducible part of that to it and push it out there. It's like you want to put out a message on Twitter. Like when it's really important for me, I do a photo with my text on the photo. But if you started doing that with your little TFAX, I guarantee you, you might find you quickly get an audience for that. And then it's a great way to push people to your podcast. Because then you can put like, hey, TFAX podcast available here as one of those things and build your own channel.
So I guess really, I think if there's a universal takeaway from everything we're saying is that I would suggest that the idea of advertising as a platform is only available to your billion-dollar mega brands. If you're Kraft, yes, you can make advertising your platform to get the word out about new macaroni and cheese.
Like they have people they pay to figure out specifically how to get over that marginal, you know, because if it only makes 3% return, that's colossal for them because they can keep doing that over. And they have people dedicated to figure out how to do this. They have people who spend all day studying how to do this stuff, and that's not available to us.
Right. So if your goal is to build up your core platform, then your game plan should not be to advertise your way towards a bigger core platform. Instead, what you do is you should guest on five other podcasts, right? And each of those becomes a miniature platform. Like, hi, I'm the guy who shows up on Tuesdays on the morning stream, and I talk about tea for 5 seconds, and then off I go.
Watch that, that's my corner. Seriously, don't touch Tuesdays.
Okay, all right. But my point is that you, by carving out a piece of somebody else's platform, it becomes a miniature platform that people care about. They're like, oh, it's Tuesday. I'm excited to hear about it's Wednesday. I'm excited to hear about teas. and then, you know, that little plug at the end where it's like, by the way, I talk about this every week over at and by the way, it's gotta be every single week.
Or it's gotta be regular.
Yes, or whatever it is, right? Whatever you're.
Or when it comes to Scott, I mean, like, you know, he does those, a lot of Tom too does a lot of those blind trailers on his show. People just send him finished content, and he'll just tack it on the end of the show. It'll just be like a legal brief or something like that, or some little like non-related content. Like there's a lot of stuff you can do. I mean, I guess, but here's my point. If all you're doing is going from suburb to suburb, asking for other people to come to your other suburb, you're only going to have X amount of success. If you want to, like, if you are making this your living, right, you really got to go out there and build social media. I mean, listen, when I quit my job, I realized that I had to do Snapchat. I had to understand what I liked about Snapchat because I talked to Ali Spagnola. And she was like, no, it is the most engageable platform I've ever been a part of. And she's somebody that's thought a lot about it, right? And has brought many of her tips and tricks from the Himalayas to many of your favorite podcasters. This is something that I had to learn. Why? Because it was going to bring me either a new level of accessibility to people who already know who I am, that want, again, can be activated in different ways, or... it's going to be, it's not great for discoverability, but it is great for engagement. But like Twitter, Instagram, all that kind of stuff, like you Facebook, like you got to realize that like these are the chaotic environments in which you can grow your audience. But the question is, in that busy downtown world, how do you appeal to those that would like your product? And that is all to say, we can go right back to the very beginning. You got to have a product that you are pumped about, that you are really happy about. This is the crux of my you have a tiny podcast that nobody listens to, and it's the best thing that could possibly happen to you talk. It's just if your product ain't ready, then the worst thing you could do is get it out in front of a jillion people.
Oh, hot damn, dude. Yeah, the inverse. I think your talk is exactly the inverse of my, you need a safe place to be bad so that you can become good. Like if nobody's listening, great. It means you have all the tension, all the reasons to show up and do your best, and none of the detriment of people disliking your stuff and calling you out.
Yeah, because it's the last thing you want. Last thing you want is for everybody on earth to listen to your show and then be like, well, this sucks. And then you would go back a year later and say, oh my God, if I had only gotten that jillion people to listen to it now that the show's better. And it's like, you know, that's be careful what you wish for. You know, listenership in podcasting. Again, this is the burbs. It's about who is there. Not a lot of people that need to be there. Brian and I are well, probably me more than Brian, because Brian's got another vehicle that's way larger. But like Night Attack, my career is living proof, man. You can make a living on 12,000 people that listen to you regularly.
Dude,
which is
and by the way, even my bigger platform is minuscule. I was talking to a very famous YouTuber, somebody who has 6 million followers, and I was describing what I do to maximize benefit from the audience that we've grown, and he's like, well, I forgive me, Brian, but the numbers you're telling me, it's like you're able to make a living and make this kind of money only on that few followers, that few subscribers. And it's like, yes, but you got to be smart. You can live, the volume is the same whether you're an inch wide and a mile deep versus an inch deep and a mile wide. It's the same amount of volume. And it's a matter of, building up that kind of deep, deep personal relationship with your audience.
Yeah. Although, is that person with 6 million have their own store? Because I feel like if you have 6 million and you have your own store, then you can understand.
Well, this was me trying to explain to that person with 6 million subscribers, like, yeah. Hey, seriously, it's a giant pain in the ass, but make a store.
Because I can understand if it's like only on YouTube revenue, you can't make a living, right? It's everything
and
else.
And sponsorships and all that and all the other stuff, right?
That's part of it, too. It's like, I don't know if people realize how hard you guys work. Brian, like you started scam stuff because you're like, you've got an audience, you've got people out there, but if you were going to, try to raise your 9 children, on YouTube revenue alone.
Oh no, it's a joke. Do you realize, let me pull back the curtain just a little bit. There's a lot to be really, really proud of, because 2 months after we launched the Modern Rogue channel, we, today, as we are doing this, we're going to cross over. Let me refresh this. We are now at 49,903 subscribers. So by tomorrow morning, we'll cross over 50,000 subscribers. We'll be halfway to the silver play button. Today also happens to be the day that we're going to cross over 1 million views online, which is also very exciting.
That's amazing.
Friday was our all-time highest YouTube revenue day. All time. You want to know what we made?
What'd you make?
$103.
Oh, shoot. Balling at the Taco Bell.
Which, again, in your mind, I need you to wrap around the fact that we have 4 production on the production team, 2 hosts. So that means that day, if we spread it out evenly, everybody made almost $20. And also, that was a record day because that was a new release day. The day before that, we made, hold on, let me give you real numbers here. There we go. The day before, we made $17.85. So that's almost 1 soft taco apiece.
So, what's interesting, though, is it's a thing to think about, in the words of our president-elect, that social media is worth more than money in some ways. Of course, if you don't have money, that's not really helpful. But if you're the ability that when you have, like, sometimes like, I have all these people listening to what I say, how do I translate into money? Well, yeah, it can be tricky. But the thing is that sometimes just being able to have like a wide engagement with people in itself has a lot of value. I love the fact that no matter what time of day it is, if I'm bored, I can pop onto Periscope and I can talk to people, Yep. I can throw a dumb question out on Twitter and I will get a reply to that, And that's got a lot of value. And that's the thing you have to think about these things is sometimes it's like, I was at a party last night for a friend's doing a book launch and I was explaining like, listen, like, 1 million followers is great, but if you have 100 people that will jump and hop on board, we need to get something done, that's even more useful. So,
heck yeah, man.
All right. But one last twisted, stupid metaphor when it comes to people who are following your product. Everybody that you attract on social media is like Penelope Cruz in Vanilla Sky. Kind of flighty. Might not hold on forever, but very exciting and can come into your life at any time.
God,
people
I
that
hope.
Listen to your podcast are, what's her face? Cameron Diaz. If you don't show up every time they expect you to, they will not feel that they will feel bad. They will feel angry. There will be a problem. Like, the most I have ever come into conflict with my audience was when, after doing 8 hours of live broadcasting on DiamondClub.tv for the election, I didn't, and telling everybody that Monday was the last regular politics, politics, politics episode, that I went a week, actually a little bit over a week, because we changed days of when we were going to do it. After doing 3 episodes a week, we went like a little over a week until I did the next episode. And people were like mad, like angry that I wasn't there, because they were used to doing me doing it 3 days a week. And my body made a promise and I wasn't there. And like, so if you're doing it every 3 to 6 weeks,
open your eyes.
I know your car's going off the side of that freeway more often than not, man.
Yeah, I would leave that message on Justin's voicemail if I didn't hear from him. Go, your body makes a promise. Not at all creepy.
No, not at all.
Hey, man, I got a pick. You guys want to talk picks?
Shoot.
I'm kind of sad this showed up in After Things, because I actually think that in a different episode of Weird Things, it would have made a wonderful 30-minute discussion. But hot damn, I tried out the brand new Google Earth VR app. Justin, have you tried this yet?
I have not, no.
You guys know Google Earth, right? It's been around, what, 15 years or so? This idea that you can fly around to places in a, you know, 2D desktop environment, and it looks delightful. It is a different beast when it is in 3D, and it's your body flying around to these places, and it's the real world. I've shown it to a few people, and one of the most amazing things to me is how, after doing the initial tutorial and being really amazed at, like, wow, I feel like a giant. Wow, I feel like I'm flying. Wow, this is the Earth. Wow, I could control time and all that stuff. The first thing everybody does is go find their home. And it was utterly delightful. This weekend I had my friend Gordon, who people have heard me talk about several times before, but he showed me his house with great pride, took me all the way around, was able to point to stuff in the backyard, explain, well, you know, this is, you know, before we put the whatever up. I put Mitzula in there, Chris Minton. First thing he did, showed me his house, took me straight there, explained, well, this is before I put the hammock here and this is where I hang out and all that. I myself, all alone in the house, the first thing I did, well, after finding my house, was I was like, oh man, I wonder what my parents' river house looks like. You know, they had it for 10 years, 15 years. And so I go and found it, and I found the exact spot on the deck, and it was out in the boonies. So the 3D stuff wasn't there, but the topology was correct. So as I sat down on the deck, you know, the hills were right and the river was right in front of me, and I set it, the sun to sunset, and I'm like, son of a bitch, this is exactly sunset. This is how I spent my 20s. And then it's like I whipped it over to sunrise, and I'm like, wow. All of a sudden, I feel like I'm holding, you know, a coffee waiting to go barefoot
like
water skiing. Yeah, exactly, right? I'm like, oh my God, I feel like I'm about to go water skiing with my dad. And when I took it off, it was so profound. I felt like I'd visited a place that that it was deeply emotional. It was utterly wonderful, and I'm amazed that they don't play up, maybe because it's a promise that they can't keep for everyone, but for some reason they don't really play up the personal connection to the Earth that you get out of this thing. But it's truly extraordinary.
It's almost as if Google as a company doesn't quite understand human emotion.
Oi, you're right.
I will reinforce, like, what's cool about that is that does like the full like head movement, like everything, right? Like,
yeah, not yeah, just- it's room scale. You get to walk around, you could sit down. And in fact, I did. I actually sat down on my parents' river house deck from back when in the day.
I'm going to make this point again, because it's not made enough in VR. Room scale, the ability of not just have your head on a fixed gimbal thing, but when you move around there, it is – a quantum leap in the way you're able to connect to VR. And that is when you have you if you just do the regular Google Gear, put it on like, oh yeah, this is really cool. It's like, that ain't VR, darling. Yeah.
It's Train Enter Station. Train Enter Station was really, really rad when everybody first saw it, and we can all understand, but you know, that ain't
when you have that feedback of your body, your whole body moving, not just where you're turning your head, but your whole body going up or down.
Yep.
It clicks. It's real at that point. And that was the difference of everything I'd done before Oculus. I'm like, oh, that's cool. My sense memory of the stuff I've done in room scale VR is totally different. It is real. And like, Brian, I believe you, that had to feel like you're flying, like you're Superman or whatever. And just, it was a real experience for you.
Yeah, and
is that in Steam?
Yes, it is, and it's free, I believe.
Yeah, it's for the HTC Vive.
Yeah, HTC Vive, and this is now like the most powerful thing. Like yes, everybody should start with Tilt Brush, but this should be your follow up if they're not into games, because this is an extraordinary experience.
Sweet, my pick is an audiobook. And I'm going to mention I continue to have a love affair with my muter, Amazon Alexa, just for listening to audiobooks. I'm consuming a lot more. Audible should just give these out to people because like I'm now like increasing my credits, because now anytime I want to listen to something, I can. So I've been burning through books. I am in the middle of a pick by Mr. Justin Robert Young. I think that's his name, suggested this. And that is a book, the Marvel Comics, The Untold Story by Sean Howe. There was a great book that came out like in the 90s about kind of the Marvel Comics wars, whatever, you know, about that, just the courtroom battles and stuff. This is a deep, deep, deep dive history, kind of on the scale of still my favorite one of all time is how Star Wars conquered the universe. But Marvel Comics, The Untold Story, it's available on Audible, available on paperback, etc. Great detail about Marvel Comics. So midway or partially, I'm still thinking I'm in the 70s on that.
Man, I would love to take credit. I cannot for tipping you off on that, because I'm gonna download that for sure.
Oh man, maybe I tapped into the future.
Yeah, you were just remembering the future. I'm sure it's fine.
Mm-hmm. It happens. So anyhow, that's my pick.
You want to know what? I'm gonna pick something that I'm gonna use a lot over the next 2 days, and that is MailChimp. Here's an advertising method that does work and pay dividends: mailing lists.
Oh my God. And that is no lie, dude. That is the final stage. That's how you know you have somebody on your team forever, is once they're on your email list. If you think you're like, oh, well, I could rely on them for blank. It's like, no, you can't. Not until they're on your email list. That means you're actually blood brothers.
Yeah. So, a couple big mailings that are going to go out today or tomorrow. And then 2 days after that, one of them will be for stickers or DIAF. Got a brand new pack that is ready to roll. It's going to be the big holiday one, and we got to send out that email. That'll go out on Monday. And then on Wednesday, we're going to put out our big email for the contender with all the stuff that we're doing over the holidays and all of our Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals. But, you know, this is It's a resource that I often find myself a little frustrated by, because it sometimes feels like it is a tool built for somebody that is doing a different thing than I am. But I mean, you can't argue with the results. The difference between the contender being in debt and the contender not being in debt, which is thankfully where we are now, was totally turned around on us understanding exactly what our relationship to our mailing list should be.
Congratulations, by the way. That's you realize that what you had, that you had that love that was a mile deep, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we didn't have a ton of people, but you know, you flip everybody that's there on Kickstarter, and you flip everybody that's bought the game that is on Shopify, allowed themselves to accept marketing, and you toss it right there on the mailing list, and you pop it out, and you realize that, you know, hell, there's a lot of people, you know, we had been told that most games don't really survive beyond a year, that, you know, you see whatever you're selling in your presale, and then that's pretty much it. People move on because they always want the new hotness. Thankfully, we have an audience that wants and repeatedly buys new content from us and are very enthusiastic about the game. And that's something that we only know and we're only able to translate into cash thanks to our mailing list and the way that we handle that as MailChimp.
That's awesome.
I'm going to give you our listeners out there some thoughts on this. MailChimp, you know, when I was working on AuthorPage to make it very easy for authors to sort of talk to people, one of the things I was going to do is build our own email system because I thought, you know, MailChimp's kind of hard to use. It could be easier. But then the thing I stepped back and I realized is MailChimp gives you like you can get a free account. I think it's like I think it's like 500 people or something.
Is that Tiny Letter?
Well, I think MailChimp has their own, but then, I mean, they bought Tiny Letter, but I think that they have, if we go to the pricing, what's the MailChimp pricing? Let's see what the up to 2,000 subscribers for free a month. Okay. You can do, that's amazing. That's fantastic. So you can have up to 2,000 subscribers a month on MailChimp. There's no reason not to start building that up. And if you want to do unlimited, you know, it starts at $20. Their pricing is, I think it's, if you're using it right. The frustrating thing about MailChimp, and it's one of those things because it's like out of, they've created a great tool for marketers and people to use that. And if you're Brian and Brian's team and you know how to go craft these letters and do that, when you first do it, it's very intimidating. And also, if you know that every time you want to send out an email, you got to spend an hour doing it, you tend not to do it. There is a secret shortcut. It's not secret, but we'll call it a secret shortcut that you can do to make your life so much easier. You can create a MailChimp account. And then you can say, hey, I want to just do plain text emails by sending them to a mailing address, which is one of the ways I send out stuff for our weird list. When I have something interesting or weird, I do it from my phone. I'm just sitting in bed. I see something interesting. I click send to the weird list. And then it sends me back a link saying, you want to send this? I say yes. It gives you a secret email address that you can email links to or our, you know, a whole thing. Like I will send on my email list, my Andrew Main list. I'll just write an email. I just write a regular email. I send it to that secret email address and it sends me back a confirmation. I say send and then it goes out to everybody. It's a much faster way. Ideally, you want to craft your emails and do that. But if you're not sending out an email at all, you're not doing any good. So create a MailChimp account for free. Go create one of those mail through email addresses so you can just do it that way and you can start talking about people. If you got a podcast episode, hey, everybody, new podcast episode up, you know, check it out. Do this. A lot of cool things. One of the features that I'm going to try to build for AuthorPage is I'm going to make it very easy for people to cut and paste a formatted block of text or a short story right into their email to send to people. Instead of saying click here to read this, nope, it's in the body of your email and it looks good.
Yeah, so. That's great. And that's a huge, huge, huge tool for people.
Yep. So I think that's a great, great pick on Justin's behalf. So check that out. I think you guys, anybody who's thinking about like, well, I don't know what I'm going to use it for. Just sign up, get an account, just start building people. I talk to authors. I'm like, what's your email list? Like, oh, I've been thinking about starting one. How long have you been thinking about starting one? Oh, I don't know. 5 years.
Yeah, dude, that's the problem. That is the artist's fallacy. This ludicrous belief that if you build it, they will come. And no. Maybe that happened at some point in history, but most likely anyone you could point to that and say, well, it happened to this guy. My guess is you just don't see the machinations behind it that made this stuff work. Yep. Somebody somewhere is building that platform to reach those people.
But Brian, this is my dream.
Yeah. No. Guess what? Your dream involves courting other people and making it easy for them to enjoy your stuff and making it even easier for them to throw you some bucks for it.
Exactly.
Mr. Reality. Gentlemen, it's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.